Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to the organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by most of the crew today. We've got Bo, Cody, and Tracy on the mic. How are you guys doing?
Grand.
Energetic.
Great.
All right. Me too. I had some coffee, driving my son Matt crazy because I'm going nuts. Matt's behind the glass. Karen is in Norway, and so I'm doing this on my own today. So, Cody, what is the topic of today's podcast?
The least you can do.
That's right. The least you can do, and what we're talking about is when it comes to being a manager of people, we're going to talk about the least you can do and still be a good manager. We were going to call this management minimalism because, like, what's the lowest bar? And as it turns out, in our society today, because I think management, because we're remote and because of just the nature of work and the transactional direction it's gone, even doing the minimum can really set you apart as a pretty good manager. And the podcast today is going to be based on my book, The Truth About Employee Engagement, which is about engaging your people. But what we realized this week is this is actually the bare minimum of what you should be doing just so your employees can like their work and do a good job. So we're going to be representing that stuff, but in the context of if you're a manager, just do this and you're going to be pretty darn good.
I love the idea, Pat. You know, so often we hear people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. And if you could boil it down to why they leave, it's not the compensation, some might be team dynamics, or, you know, there's other factors, but if you nail these three things, the likelihood of people leaving managers goes way down.
Absolutely. And yeah, and some people are going to leave a job because the company is just not what they want. Some people just need more money. But, you know, 9 out of 10 times a person leaves because of the way they're being treated or not treated at all by their manager. And so that's what we want to talk about because this is something we can control as managers. And most of employee retention is being managed well.
Well, and Cody, when you say people leave managers, I think a lot of times we assume that's the sin of commission, that somebody did something, you know, they were mean or they excluded somebody or they were a bully. And a lot of times it might just be the sin of omission, that there were simple things that they could have done to be able to keep great people.
I've heard you say this many times, Pat, which is, and I totally believe it, is had you written this book first, the Table Group might have been an employee engagement company. There's so much richness in just this concept that we could have built out an entire business helping managers become better managers and leaders just based on this concept.
Yeah, we feel like this book was kind of a stepchild because we didn't really give it all the attention it could get because we were doing so many other things. But when I look back at why I started the company, why we did, Tracy, and it was really motivated by this, which is if we could just treat people in a certain way, it could change their entire life and their career and the way they treat their family. And it's so basic that I think about the sophistication bias that we talk about in The Advantage, that some people don't do the basic stuff because it doesn't seem sophisticated enough. And boy, if this book doesn't fall squarely in that area, I'm going to describe three things today, and we're going to talk about those, that seem so ridiculously basic and fundamental and that are absolutely free of charge that people would think, well, this can't possibly be a serious competitive advantage. And yet it is. If you got every manager in your organization to do these three simple things, honestly, engagement would go through the roof, productivity would go through the roof, it would change your customers, it would change your bottom line. And so that's what we're going to talk about today because it's simple and powerful. So should we just dive right in?
Let's do it.
So Tracy, I'm going to call on you. The book was originally titled The Three Signs of a Miserable Job. So what's the first cause of job misery when it comes to managing employees?
Anonymity.
So it's yeah. Basic. This is it. If somebody is working in your organization and they don't feel like their manager knows who they are, knows what's going on in their life personally and professionally, has an idea of who they are, no matter how much you pay them, no matter how sexy their job seems, they cannot love their work. They're not going to look forward to going to work, and they can't be excited about what they're doing for customers or other people that they're serving. Getting to know your employees as basic as that seems, is such a fundamental driver of employee engagement. And it's something that every manager should know, that's my job. So the question is, why isn't this standard? What do you guys think?
I think sometimes it's not standard because managers haven't done it. And so they're embarrassed to start doing it because they don't know, you know, about people, the names of their kids, or a little bit about their story or background. And so it's so overwhelming to start, and it'd be embarrassing to sit down and be like, I know I haven't done this before, but I'd like to get to know a little bit more about you.
This is huge. I talk to people and they're like, oh, but that person's worked with me for 3 years. How do I ask them about their kids when I feel, and you know what it is? Be humble enough to sit down and say, hey, Bob, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I don't know what's going on in your life. And I should have done this a long time ago. And I'm sorry that I haven't, but I'm genuinely interested in who you are. And I'd like you to forgive me for that. And I'd like to get to know you more. Bob is never going to go, well, screw you that you haven't done this yet. You know, they're going to be like, that's great. I appreciate that. So we have to be humble enough to say, I haven't done this in the past and I'm a little embarrassed for that, but start doing it. Like remember our podcast, the best time to get to know your employees is 10 years ago. The next best time is right now.
I would say too, Pat, that we talk about this often on this podcast is sort of a fundamental flaw in the way people even approach work in general, which is that this is just a transaction. I'll pay you money for your skills. And so they think, I don't need to bring my whole self to work, or even asking a personal question about somebody is off limits at work. Like I feel like that's very common, and even increasingly common in the new Zoom environment, where it's sort of like, well, I just won't dive into your personal life and you won't dive into mine, and we'll just transact as we work together and try to, you know, work as a team, which is fundamentally flawed and something we try to undo often on this podcast, is that philosophy prevents you from bringing your whole self to work. That everything we talk about in human dignity, it can undermine all of that.
And you know what's interesting about this is I have to believe that 40 years ago, this was not the case. I think in the old days before technology and everything else, people would say, well, if they work for me, I should at least know who they are, right? I should at least know who they are. And now today, I think we have all these sophisticated management techniques and other things in technology, and people are like, yeah, we're just not doing the basic things. So knowing your employee, what's going on in their life? Is somebody sick in their home? Do they have a hobby that's interesting? Taking the time to get to know them and check in with them about those things actually matters.
And Pat, I would even say, you know, you think about 60 years ago, people got hired because they were known. Like, you didn't have Indeed.com, or, you know, you didn't have these job search sites. You had your network. And so you almost already had this established, either as a friend or a friend of a friend who you brought into the firm. And so the idea that, like, it actually got exacerbated because the job pool expanded, that we're hiring people outside of our network based on a resume. So it's far even more important to pour into that person and understand who they are as a human being.
That's right. Yeah, it's so basic and fundamental. And I am enamored with things in life that are simple that we overlook in the pursuit of something more sophisticated. And that if we only went back and did those simple things. And so here's one. And if you're listening to this and you think this sounds ridiculously simple, it's because it is. Get to know all the people who work for you. Know what's going on in their life. Know what's important to them personally and professionally. And talk to them about those things. Their morale and their productivity is going to go up significantly, and it's not that hard. And when you walk by their desk and you don't stop and say, hey, how's it going? And how's your mom doing? Or what's going on with the stuff at your house? You might as well pull money out of your wallet and throw it in the trash. Mm-hmm. Because every time you don't check in with people, it's like crushing their productivity.
And I would say it's worth it to mention working genius within this context as well, because I think that's also really important. Knowing what gives your employees joy and energy is so huge.
Yeah, beyond the productivity issue, just knowing them in that way. You know, when I walk by Joe out there and I know he's an ET and I know what that means about how he does his work, it allows me to have conversations with him about what matters to him and what he likes to do. Mm-hmm. In a way that demonstrates that I know him. So that's a great point.
Can I add one really specific thing that has helped me? I learned from my friend Clay Scroggins, who just would ask this question, how are you doing today? It's just such a simple question, but gives permission to kind of real time be able to hear how people are doing.
Yeah, the word today is the key, isn't it?
It is.
Because you can say, hey, how you doing? And people are like, was that just a throwaway comment? But it's like, hey, how are you doing today? People will stop and go, gosh, I don't know. I guess I'm doing okay. Or, you know, something's bothering me right now. Hey, by the way, I have to stop and do an unpaid ad right now for Phil's Coffee because I don't know what they put in their coffee, but I had one of those this morning and I am just about to jump off the roof with energy. Not sure what they have there, but evidently there's some sort of special caffeine because they pour it really slow or whatever else. But I don't know if people can hear this. You might want to slow it down to half speed when I'm talking, but man, am I amped up.
I love it.
All righty. The other thing I want to do is unpaid ad for is leaf blowers because there's somebody right outside the window blowing leaves. And I don't know if you can hear that on the podcast, but oh my gosh.
They were just over my head, Pat.
Yeah. That is crazy. Okay. So the first thing we have to do, the most basic thing we have to do is get to know our people. Anonymity is a job killer. And I don't care if you're the vice president of marketing at the sexiest, biggest company in the world. If the CEO doesn't know who you are going to come to work feeling very different than if they did. All right? So, Bo, what is the second sign of a miserable job, the thing that managers need to overcome if they're going to do just the least that they can do as a manager?
Yeah, the second sign is irrelevance.
Right. And this is actually the one that provoked me to write this book because I was in an airport and I, just a second.
Real pop quiz situation there.
I know. Oh, I think Pat is up on the roof right now. I just heard
I love footsteps. This guy.
I think he's on the roof.
It's probably going to go great, I would imagine.
He is on the roof. I can hear him.
Okay, well, we got to tell the listeners what just happened because Pat literally got up from his desk. We took a three, four, five minute hiatus, and he climbed up a ladder in our office that only leads to this roof access point. And then, Pat, you went and spoke to this leaf blower yourself.
Yeah, there was literally like 6 feet above me on the other side of the roof. There was a guy blowing leaves right above us, the leaf blower. And he, you know, anyway, he stopped finally.
So Pat went over and said, how are you today?
Yes. How's it going? We're doing a podcast right below your feet. So
you gave him all three signs of a miserable job. You made sure he loved his, he was dignified in his work. I love it.
What's going on in your life, sir? Let's talk about that. The next thing is, let's talk about why your job is, Bo, what's the second sign of a miserable job? The thing that all managers have to overcome.
Yeah, it's irrelevance.
That's right. When people feel like, and this is the one that provoked this book to be written in the first place. If people don't think their job matters in some way, large or small, to someone else's life, everyone, I think we're born with a need to contribute to other people's lives in some way. And if we think that the work we do doesn't really matter to anyone, there's no way, I don't care how much money you make, you cannot like your job. And I see this among people who feel like if I didn't actually do this, it wouldn't matter. Irrelevance, I think, is huge. And this came about when I was in the airport in Oklahoma City at a restaurant called Corky's Barbecue. Somebody reminded me later. And we were just looking at these people that worked in a fast food restaurant, and they were miserable. They were just so unhappy to be there. And we felt bad for them. I grew up really fascinated by people who hated their jobs. And then this young guy came to work, and he was all excited. He was like 17 or 16, and he seemed excited. And the people that worked with him were just treating him like, who cares? And I thought, they're going to beat the life out of this kid. He's going to hate his job in about 2 weeks too. And I remember Karen and I were sitting there and I said, what would you have to do to help that kid and the people that work with him in this fast food restaurant in an airport? What would you have to do to help them like their work? And I, what occurred to me right then is they need to know that what they're doing actually helps people. And so if I'm their manager, my job is to sit down and give them some perspective on why their work matters. And it's not like, hey, people like chicken sandwiches, so you give them a chicken sandwich. What I said is it has to be more than that. And I thought about it and I thought, somebody should tell these people that if you're nice to people in an airport where people are so stressed out and unhappy, you're going to actually change that day, change the environment. They're going to go home to treat their family better, talk to the person that's sitting next to them better. Your job is to bring joy to people in an otherwise joyless world. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I'm a 17-year-old kid or a 45-year-old woman who's working at a fast food restaurant in the airport, I would love to know that that's my job. And all of us as managers have to sit down and say to people, your job matters to somebody, and I want to remind you of that.
Well, I love that story for a lot of reasons. Well, one is simply this, is like, I've been through the airport, and I've thought before, oh man, when you don't get a job at the Corky's Barbecue on Main Street, and you have to get the job at the Corky's Barbecue in the airport, and you have to park your car at airport security and then go through a metal detector to get to your job. The general consensus is, oh, well, this job is just going to be miserable. Like, I think most people would just say, well, this is just a bad job. And what I love about your brain in that moment is to say, even that job, or a frontline factory worker, or a coal miner, if you give them these three things that we're talking about, it raises the it eliminates job misery. I mean, even in that context, I think people just would take that at face value and say, oh, that job is going to suck. And there's really three things you can do to say, no, it won't. If you have these three things, it can still be a fulfilling place to work.
Right. And imagine if that kid comes to work in that airport and the manager goes, hey, how did you do on your test yesterday? I mean, if you were standing there and listening to it and a manager said, hey, how'd you do on your test yesterday? And how's your mom feeling? Is she feeling better? You're just like, you're going to think, oh my gosh, what a great manager that is. And then if they said, hey, now remember, there's a lot of people today. It's really crowded in the airport. People are really bummed out and stressed out. So let's remember, we might be the only source of kindness that they experience here. So let's get out there and be kind to them. Some managers would say, well, that would be dorky to say that. 99% of employees are like, oh man, I would love it if my manager did that.
Totally. You know, and I want to go back to that thing we started with, which is people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. And we tend to think of that as, oh, this is a good job, but a bad manager. And so people leave that. But the inverse is true too. It's like, actually, you can have a bad job and a great manager, somebody who gives you these three things, and you'll actually stay in that role, even if it's not what appears to be like a sexy or good job. The idea is that if your manager is giving you this stuff, you're satisfied, fulfilled, and you would stay in that job.
Exactly. You know, I was a bank teller, which is like the worst job for my working genius. But my manager wasn't great behind the counter there. And even though I didn't like the job, had somebody really known me and appreciated me and kind of encouraged me and caught me doing something that mattered to the customers, I would have been totally psyched to be there. But but they didn't. So in addition to not liking the work itself, I actually didn't even feel known or relevant. And so it was misery layered upon misery.
Pat, is this something where a manager needs to have a different answer for each employee, or their way of communicating relevance can be somewhat consistent the way you talk about it with your team?
That's a great question, Bo. I think that to a large extent, it's consistent if it's the same job, right? Because, and let me be very clear, this is not just about customers. It's like somebody has to benefit. And for some managers out there, the manager is actually the person who benefits from you doing a good job. And the manager has to be comfortable enough saying, do you realize how much better you make my life or my work when you do a good job? I want you to know that you make it easier. Or I remember I had a boss who would, when I got back from working with the executive team on something at another company I worked at, she said, you know, Pat, you make me and my department look really good. And I really appreciate that. That might sound odd that she said that to me, but I really liked it. I thought, hey, that matters to her, and I'm making her job and her life better. And sometimes we don't like to say that as a manager because we think it's selfish. And so then people are doing things that are making our job better or our life easier, and we don't say that to them, and we're depriving them of feeling really good about what they're doing. So it might be a customer, it might be a vendor, it might be an internal employee, it might be us as their manager. what we have to remember is everybody wants to know that the work they do is benefiting somebody else's life in some way, large or small. Now, if you have three people doing the same job, it's going to be pretty consistent. But then maybe based on who they are, you might have to give them a little uniqueness around that. It might, and like they're working genius, it might be, hey, do you realize why this, what you did is creative, or why what you did is really responsible? So you can probably alter it a little bit, but it's usually based on the work itself. And that's the most important thing. Okay, let's move on to the third. So the first thing we have to do is we have to know our people. The second thing we have to do is remind them why their job is important, why it's relevant. And that second one is, to me, so important. Catch people doing that all the time. One of the things I love listening to Danny and Joel and Joe in our office talk to customers. And so sometimes I'll be walking by and I'll just stand there and I'll listen to them. And they'll get off the phone. They said, what are you doing? I said, I just like to listen to you talk to customers because I know the way you're talking to them, that they're appreciating it. And I know that they're kind of nervous, like they're trying to implement something on their team and you're helping them. And I just love knowing that they're getting that service from you. And just doing that makes their job. And it's not like I'm a hero. I know that it goes through my mind. But if I don't stop and tell them that and remind them of that and delight in that, I might as well, again, be pulling money out of our bank account and throwing it into a fire because it's something they need to hear. Mm-hmm. Okay, Cody, what is the third thing that we need to do if we're doing the very least we can do as a manager? We get to know them, we remind them of why their job is relevant, and what's the third thing they need?
Well, the thing, you made this word up, I think, because you wanted something that's accurate, is called, the third sign of a miserable job is immeasurement.
Yes, I asked that in the wrong way, didn't I? Immeasurement is a bad thing. What our employees need is some way to measure, and I would even say a better word is observe, whether they're doing a good job or not. Everybody needs to know, am I succeeding in this role? And how can I know? What is it that I can see, observe, and put my hands around that is an indication that I'm succeeding? And the problem is, it's usually not a metric. Now, when you have an easy metric, that's great. But usually, there's not a clean, tidy metric, a numerical measurement. But there's still plenty of observable things that can give a person an idea that they're being successful in their work. And this is my weakness. This is hard for me. And it's a challenge for many leaders or managers. But we have to sit down with our people and say, I want to give you a sense for yourself of when you're doing a good job or when you're not, so you can be motivated to address that rather than wait for a report or wait for me to tell you what I think. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I think it'd be helpful, Pat, if you give an example.
Right. And I like to give examples that aren't neat and tidy because it's not always easy. I remember in the book, The Truth About Employee Engagement, formerly known as The Three Signs of a Miserable Job, that this guy, and we talked about this a little earlier, but a guy... He buys a fast food restaurant because the people there are miserable. He's retired and he's bored. So he buys this fast food restaurant. And the slacker of all slackers in the restaurant is this kid that works the drive-through window. So he goes to the kid and he gets to know him and he reminds him why his job matters. And then he says, now, I want you to have some way to measure or observe whether or not you had a good night at the drive-through window. So he asks the kid, so what do you think you could observe or measure? And the kid says, well, how about how fast people go through the drive-through window? Because he's looking for a metric. He goes, well, are you the one that determines that? And he says, no, it's the people in the kitchen who get the food out. He goes, well, that's not a good measurement then. That's not even up to you. What else could you measure? And the kid says, I don't know. And he goes, how about this? Let's just have you see how many people you can make laugh when they come through. Because if the people laugh about something, they're probably more likely to want to come back. And so I want you to measure how many people of what percentage of the people that come through the drive through you can make laugh in some way. But the kid immediately says, well, who's going to measure that? And he goes, well, you are. Just get a napkin or something and write it down. He goes, well, how do you know I'm not going to lie? And he goes, listen, this isn't to go into your HR record. It's just, I want at the end of the night for you to go, hey, I got 80% laughs. Or, oh, tonight was kind of tough. I only got 20. Tomorrow I want to do better. See, it's not about having a legal document. It's about giving people their own sense of, at the end of the night, say, I had a great night. They can go home and go, I did a really good job today. And when a person doesn't know that, and they're kind of waiting for their performance review once a quarter, or they're wondering if their boss is in a good mood and they're going to be nice to them, that's a terrible thing in your job. It's great when the manager can go to the employee and say, how was your day today? And they can say, I can tell you based on my own observations, it was a fantastic day, or it was a little bit of a struggle.
I love the way you laid that out, Pat. And there, so often there's some jobs where that's more baked in than other jobs. And so in other words, we've talked about this in terms of like a waiter or waitress, you know, the someone who's serving someone in that setting, they have an immediate measure when they turn the receipt over and see how much someone tipped them. They get an idea of like, oh, that makes, I have a measurement of how well I serve that customer. You know, and so there's baked in measurement to that job, whereas most jobs it's not that obvious. And for a manager to need to sit down and say, what is a way that you can know on a day-to-day basis, it's so important and so missing.
Right. And people often think that the waiter or waitress is looking at that bill because they're wondering how much money they're going to make. And so they think it's just like about the finances. It's not, it's about, did that person recognize that I did a good job? And everybody needs that. And certain jobs have that baked in, but so many jobs don't. And our role as a manager is literally just to sit down with somebody and say, how do you think you know? And sometimes it's like this, hey, at the end of the week, I want you to go around to all the vendors or all the internal people you work with and just say, hey, did I do a good job for you today? Do me a favor, give me a rating on a 1 to 5, because I really want to know. It might just be that. It might be like I was talking to a bunch of priests yesterday, and it's like when you talk to your music minister, it's like, and you say, you know, what's really important about it, the way you do music at church is it elevates people to God and it helps them pray better. So I want you to, I'm going to observe whether or not people seem peaceful, or it might be, I want people to sing. So at the end of every service, I'm going to go to you and say, hey, it seemed to me like people were singing more. What do you think? And it's, again, not about catching them doing the wrong thing. It's about giving them some way to say, I think I had a good service this time. So some way for people to measure. You know, when I was at the bank, I think about my least favorite job was I was a bank teller. The only measurement I had at the end of the day was I in balance? You know? And if I was, I think I could have been rude to my customers. I could have been rude to my colleagues. But if I was in balance and there were, the pennies all added up at the end of the day, that was my only binary measure of whether I had a good day. Well, that was about the least important thing to me, which is why I shouldn't be a bank teller. But if my customers loved me and I was doing a good job and helping everybody out, none of that mattered. I only had one metric, and it was that thing. And I don't think that was actually really, really, I mean, it was necessary, but it wasn't a complete indication of whether I was doing a good job.
Another example for me on the other spectrum was I worked at a large university for a bunch of years, and we did the quarterly performance reviews, and everybody was evaluated on the same 140 questions, which is so ridiculous that everybody would have the same things they're measured on, where you have different jobs and different skill sets and different things that you contribute to the team. And what a great leader can do is help somebody see, no, this is what really I see you make a difference when you do this. If somebody had done that for me, I might still be in that job today.
Right. Which we're not saying, hey, keep people in a job they don't want to be in by treating them well. But,
sure.
But do everything you can to help somebody love their job. Yeah. And then they'll make the decision based on what's best for them. They won't, because so many times we have people that have a great job for them, but we're not doing this, and they leave for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting to think of it in the context of how people perceive employee engagement, or think that they're boosting their employee engagement scores in the world today, because there's so many people, like if this is the basic, when we call this the least you can do, this is the blocking and tackling, like this is what you should do as a manager. But oftentimes companies go beyond the blocking and tackling and go to, oh, well, we have all these benefits that should make you feel engaged while you work here. And all those benefits, which are, you know, I imagine sitting in a job interview and there's one of two things that you could say is like, hey, what are the benefits of working here? And a company who doesn't buy into this is like, well, there's fruit smoothies in the kitchen and you can bring your dog to work on this day. And we have a daycare here and we get dinner at night. And the other, imagine somebody sitting across the interview table and hearing, hey, you know what's great about working here is every one of the managers that works here, they're going to know who you are. you're going to constantly hear why your job matters, and you're going to feel like you have a self-assessing way of measuring if you're doing a good job or not. There's no amount of fruit smoothies in the kitchen that can make up for that, but that's where we put all of our energy and effort.
Isn't it crazy? And so many of these sophisticated, sexy companies, Silicon Valley's full of them and other places, probably in Wall Street, that do all those things. And they're wondering, like, why are people leaving? And then you can go into the most basic jobs ever. And if people feel like they're known, somebody's reminding them why things matter, and they have some way to measure, they're like, how come people are coming to work here excited and they're staying here for a long time? It is just crazy that we miss the most basic things. It's like saying, well, my wife and I, you know, we have a nice house and a good car and all the, you know, we go on nice vacations, but I don't tell her I love her and I don't appreciate what she does for me and I don't take an interest in what's going on in her life. And it's like, what's wrong with our marriage? It's like, it is, that's crazy. I know that seems preposterous, but that's what's happening in so many workplaces. So what we want to say to people today is this, and I really want to say this, go sit down, write, we have a thing we'll put in our show notes, a little form, but the form is ridiculous. It's so simple. Write down, what do I know about the people that work for me? And when's the last time I asked them about those things? Why does their job matter to somebody else? It could be me, it could be a customer, it could be a vendor, it could be a colleague. And then when's the last time I caught them doing those or reminded them of why their job matters? And then how do I observe whether they're being successful? And have I talked to them about that? And maybe I need to get their input on that. Go have that conversation. You can do all of those things in 15 minutes. And I promise you this, 2 weeks after you do that, you are going to notice a difference in morale, productivity, and the entire culture of your office if you do those things, which are absolutely free of charge. And if you do those things, it's going to impact way more than bringing your dogs to work or those fruit smoothies, unless, of course, they're blueberry, because that's a superfood. All right.
Celery smoothie. Hey, right?
That's what we want to say.
Celery smoothies, Tracy, for the win.
Before you wrap up, you mentioned the webinar you did yesterday, and I listened to that webinar, and you made, during that webinar, a little mini breakthrough on when to actually use this framework with an employee, and it was around corrective action. Can you share a little bit about that? Because I thought that was fantastic.
You know, and I can't believe like 22 years after we wrote this book or something, I don't know how long it's been, I just realized this yesterday, and that's like, if you're sitting down with an employee who's not performing well, think about these three things. Start by saying, hey, I don't know what's going on in your life right now, Bob, so I'd like to talk to you about that, but your job is really important, because this is how you impact our customers and other people. And I've observed some things that make me think that maybe you're struggling in this and it's not working out. So I'd like to just talk to you about that. Are my observations, my measurements clear? Are you aware of how important your job is? And is there something going on in your life that might be causing this so we can address that? If you go sit down with anybody to give them difficult feedback and you remind them about all three things, it's going to be so much easier for them to go, actually, yeah, I'm struggling in my marriage right now, or I've been really sick, or something else is going on, or, you know, I think I forgot why my job matters and I just have been mailing it in, or, you know, I think some of the things you're seeing aren't accurate, or they might say, you know, you're right, I just need to improve, or I need to move on to something else. But if you just go and say you're not doing a good job and you don't give them a chance to talk about why their job matters and what's going on in their life, it's going to be very adversarial. So I actually think this is a great recipe for having a corrective conversation. And it allows them to open up for whatever it is they really need to talk about. All right? So, okay. So
I love it.
Who's doing the unpaid ad today?
Well, Pat, I think you did it for leaf blowers and Phil's coffee, unless you've got something else. That was fantastic.
You know, I used to rake leaves as a kid all the time, helping my dad. There were no leaf blowers back then. That's how old I am. And I'm going to say, I'm going to do my commercial for rakes, because I feel bad for the people who make rakes. And boy, have I watched a guy blow leaves down the street, like three leaves, and say, hey, you just bend over and pick those up. You're done. So I'm going to actually do my unpaid ad for rakes, the old fashioned way to get leaves off the ground. All right. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. And before we sign off, I just wanted to make sure all of our podcast listeners are invited. We would love for you to join us on November 8th at 11 o'clock Pacific. We'll put the link in the show notes. Pat is going to be at the whiteboard for a free live webinar where we're going to conquer or tackle this big idea of how do we unfrustrate our meetings. And we've done an event like this in the past. And Pat, it's so fun to see you at the whiteboard helping people make their meetings more effective and less terrible. So I want all of you to sign up. Bring your team members. It's going to be a blast. It's always such a fun event. And we do it live. We'll take some audience questions and we'll literally be in Pat's native environment out the whiteboard.
All righty. Thank you, Bo. And thank you all for joining us. Thank you for bearing with our leaf blowers. And we will talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.